We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's Wednesday night. It's 9 o'clock on the East Coast. You know what time it is. It's time for the NFL Pick Six Show, Week Three. Rich Rebar, Sharp Football Analysis, the worksheet. John Daigle, 4 for 4, bet spurts. John Daigle, fresh off of watching our movie, we will discuss later on in the show. And I hope this doesn't affect your performance. But we did watch this week Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, and it's not exactly an upper. But hopefully, if you want to give a tease for later on in the show. Your thoughts, you're gonna be able to power through, I suppose. Not the happiest of movies.
I may need to cry before we start talking about football. Other than that, though, we know the lanes to hit, except when I pick movies, even though I'll try to be kinder in 2023 to y'all if I ever take down the contest, which I didn't this week. But enjoyable in a different way.
You mentioned take down the contest, and we're starting. The people have spoken. The people have demanded that they want a listener league. We're making it happen.
Oh, yeah.
A 100-person listener league. Producer Devin set it up for us. We're going to go ahead and drop that in chat. I'll drop it in chat. It'll be pinned on the YouTube as well. We weren't sure how to size it. We're going with 100 people. $5. $5 to enter. A little bit of added value this week as well. If you finish first, or if one of us finishes first, like the closest to somebody that's not associated with the show, you get yourself 1 week free of Roto-Grinders Premium. So let's have fun with the chat. Go ahead and sign it up. The couch gang with the edibles. Get off your seats. Get off your chair and sign up. 100 people. We're going to make that happen, right, Rich? 100 people should not be an issue. I assume our people are going to be they demanded it. They asked for it. So now they got to sign up.
That's right. Yeah. We should be able to get 100 for sure.
I would certainly hope so. If this is your first time here, week three, welcome. How this show works, we talk about the main slate. We don't talk about other games. So no Thursday night game, no Sunday night game. Monday night, they're running it back. Two more games on Monday night, so we only have a 12-game main slate. Rich, before we dive in as far as the main slate and dig through it, and like again, we focus on three main games, run it back, give our fair plays position by position amongst players that were not in those three featured games. Anything worth noting as far as week two? A lot of injuries out there. A trade just went down before the show. Madison, so terrible for Minnesota. They brought in Cam Akers. We saw Kareem Hunt is in Cleveland. I don't know how much that's going to matter, but yeah, a lot of moving parts. We're recording this on a Wednesday night, so bear that in mind. Anything worth noting week two or going forward, Rich? What do you got?
No, I mean, week two was excellent. There was offense. There were touchdowns, which meant there were fantasy points. So it was a really good week. Set some really good lineups. Hopefully we can run it back. I was curious to see what games Daigle is going to pick because this slate for week three is on paper objectively not great. A lot of good teams play bad teams. And we don't have a lot of great individual matchups where like it's like two-sided. So I'm excited to see what he picked out and what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's kind of dig in and talk about that very first game. By the way, you mentioned offense last week. What first week was like, what, I mean, four overs hit out of all the games. And I think almost every single game went over in the second week two. except for Jacksonville and Kansas City. Funny how that works. The biggest
the chalk game. Listen, the chalk game will always get you, man.
Yeah.
You know,
there's 22 more touchdowns on offense scored last week than there was in week one. So hopefully we can run it back. I mean, we really like the tutties.
And we're going to discuss the chalk game in the Big Three preview. Don't worry.
Yeah, let's get that one out of the way. And look, John, you got anything else as far as any week two takeaways? Anything you want to point out before we kind of dive in? Or you just want to dive in?
We can dive in. I thought we did well together as a team calling our shots last week. We had Christian Kirk. We had Gabe Davis. We talked about perhaps spending down at quarterback. And I know Brock Purdy game stacks won mid-stakes, high-stakes single entries. Geno Smith won the Millie Maker just stacked alone with Tyler Lockett. So, yeah, we did well. Let's see if we can just run it back.
All right, let's do it. You mentioned the highest total on the board here, John. Chargers at Minnesota. It's everything you want, right? It's high, it's tight. We're expecting a lot of plays. It's in a dome. 53.5 is the total. Chargers looks like a 1-point favorite. Again, we just saw Cam Akers get traded to Minnesota because, Madison has been certifiably pretty terrible. And I was talking about how fast that game's expected to play per Derek Carty's the Blitz. It is projected to have the most plays of the week. I believe it's 136.1, which is almost 4 plays more than the second fastest game. Dealer's choice here, John. Feel free to start wherever you want to start. You want to touch on the Akers stuff? Do we assume he's going to play this week? How much that's going to matter? Or you want to avoid that for now?
He will probably play. The most recent example off the top of my head is Christian McCaffrey. But, of course, that's Christian McCaffrey, who just showed up to the 49ers a few days later and was himself in that game. But overall,
remember? He only played like 10 or 15 snaps against the Chiefs.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, that's the most recent example I have off the top of my head, Rich, unless you have another one.
No, I'm sure there's a couple more, but yeah, McCaffrey was the one who kind of, Jeff Wilson, that was the same thing, right? At the same time, they both got traded the same week.
And Mostert got injured in that game, so it's like all kind of misconstrued. I guess the point, though, where we can start is that I don't know if it matters at all. Let's start on Minnesota side of the ball, because both Tua and Ryan Tannehill reached 21 fantasy points against this defense. Tannehill did have a rushing touchdown, certainly helped him, but he completed 83% of his passes after he looked just miserable in week one against New Orleans. I do think the Chargers are probably still susceptible against the run, but why would anyone ever run against them whenever 25% of passes against them so far have gone for 15 yards? So it kind of just fits in the scheme of what the Vikings are doing right now, because the Vikings added Cam Akers stubbornly, but they added Cam Akers because they're getting absolutely nothing from their backfield. Mind you, they have played two tough, stout run defenses to start. But even then, they only have one 10-yard touch out of their two running backs they've used so far. And that was an 18-yard catch from Ty Chandler in week one. They're just basically getting nothing even through the air. That's why they went to Akers. But overall, that also tells you that they can't move the ball on the ground anyhow, and they're going to have to attack this pass defense, which has been allowing very big plays. So it actually, think, matches up well for how the Vikings want and should play.
All right. By the way, Akers, I just realized, unless they do something with the sites, like that the Rams play on Monday night, so he's not even in the player pools currently. Yeah. So I don't know how that's going to work out, or if you want to roster him anyway. I was just going to think how
Madison up and definitely would have caught some ownership too. May, honestly. But Madison definitely would have caught ownership just to try to get the touches in what seems like a better spot.
Yeah, my initial thought was like, and I thought going into the season, like Chandler was one of those guys that has some juice, looks good in the few videos I saw on Twitter. I'm not like a college guy or a draft guy, but the little I saw, I'm like, oh, this guy looks like he could be something. And maybe it was a lack of confidence in Chandler being able to step up and take over for Madison. They didn't give anything up for what it's worth. Like they flipped, a sixth and a seventh or something like that. So there was really no risk, I suppose.
In 2026.
Yeah, who cares? It's completely meaningless, but you have a thought, a takeaway? Is that kind of your thought here, Rich, when it comes to running backs don't matter, and they're confirming it?
Well, I mean, the whole Madison contract extension was weird anyways, because remember, this regime had him last year, and he had a career low amount of touches and wasn't good on the touches he had. Then he gets extended. The team does like that weird like banner where they put him like with like Justin Jefferson and Kirk Cousins. And then, you know, basically the entire preseason, they were kind of kicking the tires around a few running backs. They had Miles Gaskin. They had, like, brought in Kareem Hunt at one point. And then, you know, Cam Akers played with Kevin O'Connell with the Rams. So, like, he's got some familiarity with them. He's got some familiarity with the system. But it's just the whole Madison saga this summer has been weird. It's just been weird. And this is a guy that's, like, has now a multi-year sample of being inefficient outside of, like, everything going on, right? Like, Garrett Bradbury hasn't hurt. Christian Darrisaw's been out of the lineup. But, like, we have, like, a three-year running sample of Alexander Mattison being pretty, like, average and really below average as a running back.
The main focus here, though, Rich, I imagine, for Minnesota is the passing game, specific to the Jefferson, the Hockenson. And this is one of my biases. I just don't like playing quarterbacks that don't have the ability to, like, run the ball. And they basically have to get there 303, and certainly Cousins can do it. It's a good matchup. We talked about the total, 26 total. Optimals on a Wednesday night, LOL, but optimals on a Wednesday night. He's the most popular quarterback. He's not running away with it. But he's currently landing in a lot of lineups. He just doesn't feel like a guy that can, like, take stuff down fully. But, of course, he can throw 400 and get four touchdowns, and we're good to go there. Your thoughts as far as Cousins and, like, very clearly who the pairings are, his targets. Yeah.
So, certainly popular Cousins has never let us down either when he's a popular play. But, I mean, it does line up. Like, they'll kind of hit it. I mean, 91% of the Vikings' yardage so far this season has come through the air. The Chargers are allowing 9 yards per passing play. That's a league high. And this is, like, another thing. It's like, this isn't a new development with the Chargers. You know, since Brandon Staley has been with the Chargers, they're 27th in catches allowed to go for 20 or more yards. They're last in the NFL in catches allowed to go for 30 or more yards. 29th in the NFL for catches allowed to go for 40 or more yards. Like, this team has been giving up splash plays since he's been there. And that's kind of like his MO. You know, Brandon Staley catches a lot of heat for how he coaches games, but really kind of the one detriment to his, like, tearing him down is that he's a defensive coach and the defense has sucked since he's been there. And they've got talent. Like, they have a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. It does line up to where, like, you would, because this is the same thing with the Vikings, right? Like, the Vikings are living their same life again. They're just playing in these weird games, going into the fourth quarter trailing, and Cousins is just winging it around the yard. I mean, he's thrown for 364 yards, stacking yards. He actually played a lot better to start this year than he did last year. Mm-hmm. Last year, he really only was good in the fourth quarter. He's been playing well. The team kind of let him down a little bit last Thursday with all those turnovers. Only one was his, the sack fumble, but they were in that game. What's interesting about the Vikings, I think, is their defensive approach with Brian Flores. Like, he's just been living in, like, the Brian Flores world of just, like, preventing big plays. He wants teams to run against light boxes. Like, that whole game on last Thursday, like, he was just telling the Eagles, he was like, I don't care. What's funny is he still got beat over the top twice by Devontae Smith, but he was just like, I don't care how often you run for 6 yards per carry. And it took Brian Johnson, the Eagles, like, 3 drives to kind of calibrate, but he didn't adjust. Like, he was just like, cool, I'm content as long as you're not throwing on me. So I'm really curious to see what they do against this, you know, Chargers team that has had really a lot of success passing. And we've seen some kind of adjustments in calibration under Kellen Moore, especially if we don't have Austin Eckler again, because we saw with Austin Eckler out, Justin Herbert had his third highest ADOT of his career. He took more vertical shots and he threw to running backs sub 10% of the time for just the third time in his career. So it did make a difference with Austin Eckler being out, you know, Herbert being able to push the football down the field a little bit more. But I'm real curious to see how Brian Flores approaches this game, because if we don't get Eckler, you have kind of the reverse flop leg spot with Joshua Kelly, where he was shitty chalk last week. And he could be actually a really decent play in this game if there's no Austin Eckler.
Yeah, John, how is that going to play out? And we'll talk about it again. There's another cheap running back against Tennessee, the wall that is Tennessee. Their rush defense has been spectacular with Cleveland. We'll discuss that later in the show, I'm sure. But, and Eckler, they said, what, no timetable? So nothing official, but it seems like he's not going to play this week. We'll see. John, your thoughts as far as the Chargers? I think the best way to talk about it is assume Eckler's out, but, you know, certainly he could play, but it seems more likely he's not going to play. Your read of the Chargers.
And I do wonder if Flores even changes anything, since he refused to change anything the first 2 weeks. And as Rich hinted on Thursday night, the Vikings have only played 2 total snaps of man coverage. They have not done anything at all. They are just telling you, we dare you to beat you deep. And then, of course, the Eagles did on a couple shot plays. But you mentioned the other cheap running back that we'll talk about later, who's in the same exact spot as that we wanted to fade the first 2 games. Josh Kelly is now in the opposite spot. Rich also mentioned this. And yes, week one, we saw 16 carries for Eckler, 16 for Josh Kelly, even five scrambles from Justin Herbert. Week two against this Titans secondary, which we'll also touch on later. Don't worry. We saw Justin Herbert go through the air 40 times, go over 300 yards. And now it's the opposite spot. It's the better spot for Josh Kelly. Only 65% of the backfield touches, but we also expect them to be more of a run-heavy offense. At least this game, if that's what Kellen Moore has shown us through two games, considering that last week they passed on 70% of their plays within one score. They wanted to be pass heavy, and that was the opposite. They ran the ball at the eighth highest rate on early downs within one score in week one. So it just depends how Kellen Moore wants to call this, but honestly, everything we've described, it makes sense that they also take what the defense gives them, slow it down, make it an under game, make everyone pissed off. They stack the chalk game, and Josh Kelly instead gets 16 to 22 touches, and that's the play we should be on.
I was going to ask Allen or Mike Williams, and it sounds like you're not like loving either one, considering it's going to be pretty popular this game as a whole. Do you have a read? Yeah,
it's still Justin Herbert, so of course you can play this. I don't want to put that on this show. I talked about how I was skeptical about Chargers Dolphins week one. And then of course I got buried by everyone's shovel. So I'll take the blame on this one. But we talk about constantly on the show. We even discussed Gabe Davis, Christian Kirk, how these offenses play. It's the same thing for Keenan Allen and going back to zone coverage for his career. Last year, he was 15th in yards per run against zone coverage. And this year, I already just told you, Brian Flores, only two snaps for man coverage all season. And so if we're assuming we're getting zone coverage, Keenan Allen is yet again only two games, but he's 14th in yards per out run against zone coverage. So we think he's still the one that can beat out Mike Williams. Although Mike he's stepping on the door. Like, he's always just short of a few big plays here and there these first two games. We also didn't know the extent of what he looked like under Kellen Moore since he got injured in week one. And then last week we saw a team high 33% target share. So maybe Mike is still a great play if you're double stacking this game, but usually in this kind of formation and this setup, it's Keenan Allen who wins outright. Also because Keenan Allen is just good.
You on board with that, Rich? Allen versus Williams?
Yeah. And I think, you know, we've seen under Kellen Moore, like the Allen's had like a significant change. Mike Williams has had a little bit of change too. He played less in the slot last week than did in week one, but hey, Keenan Allen's kind of running a little bit of that CeeDee Lamb kind of in the slot usage that we've seen, you know, CeeDee Lamb get the last couple of years under Kellen Moore. 16% of Keenan Allen's routes this season have come 20 or yards further downfield, just 7.5% in 2022. It's the highest rate of his career. You know, he opened the season with like a 35-yard catch on like a sideline wheel route. So he's getting a little more different usage than the old like Keenan Allen route tree used to be. So it's one of those things that's kind of flying a little bit under, but going back to last year when he came back after that second hamstring aggravation, he's just been excellent and he's been getting a ton of targets. So why not just keep going back to the well on him?
You're building a stack, Rich. You're only making one stack. What quarterback, how are you building this up? I don't know if did we say anything about Jefferson. He's spectacular. He's awesome. He's good.
He's going to play Justin Jefferson.
What are we supposed to say? Like he's amazing. You know, how much are you going out of your way to get him? I suppose is one of the questions. Certainly you can pair Cousins with Jefferson and Hockenson and get a large chunk of that offense as well. But yeah, Rich, you want Herbert or Cousins as the starting point of your stack of this game?
I mean, I always want to try to get Herbert. I think it does make sense though, from a lineup building perspective, because this game's hard to stack because everyone's expensive, right? Like even Hockenson is not cheap anymore. So I think the way to do it, or from like a salary perspective, is probably the Cousins, Jefferson, Joshua Kelly way. And then maybe you add an Addison or like a KJ Osborne in there if you really want to get cute. That's the other thing too, is like nothing's changed for the Vikings. Like Hockenson is still doing like what he did at the end of last year. He's only averaging 5.9 yards per target, 6 yards per catch. But we haven't seen Jordan Addison like really get involved in terms of like a route participation perspective. It's still been a slow burn for him. He's still not playing a lot. So like as default, like Hockenson's still just doing his thing where he's getting like all of these like piddly targets and it's enough to float him.
Anything else here we should point out, John, as far as Chargers, Minnesota, it's going to be one of the most popular games on the board. Some really good pieces, the highest total expected to be close on the turf, lots of plays. What else we stress? Is there anything else we have to point out for the people before we move on?
First team to go up by two scores, bet the opposite team live. And since it will be the most popular game, like, I know, Rich, you called the slate ugly, and you're right. But at the same time, I think there are some fun games here because we still have so many questions about some NFL teams. Like, we could get some ugly high-scoring games here if high-scoring exists in the NFL.
There's a 80% chance the Chargers have the ball with 2 minutes to go down three. Like, that's how this game happens. That's why you're mentioning that, John, I assume. It's going to be close at the end because that's how the Chargers games go.
Funny story. Went to DraftKings Sportsbook at Wrigleyville last Sunday. I still have to bring my laptop and take notes throughout the games because I have shows on Sunday. But Connor Allen, good friend at 4 for 4, had an 8-leg parlay. He bets heavy on props, but he still had some dumb parlays to sweat it live. 8-leg parlay with Justin Herbert needing only 9 more passing yards going into overtime. And of course, I looked at him and said, you realize what's about to happen, right? Because they're the Chargers. They got the ball. And then, of course, Justin Herbert and the Chargers, they go 3 and out immediately because they are the Chargers. And that would have completed the leg of the parlay. So you just never trust them.
Yeah, there's no way the Chargers aren't up like 20-3 in the second quarter of this game. And like, we're just somehow it's like 27-24.
Absolutely. Guaranteed.
This is a loser's leave town game almost. It's like, I don't want to say must win, but both teams are 0-2, right?
I mean, the Chargers have Super Bowl expectations. Like, we thought the Vikings would regress. The Vikings and the Giants were the two teams that were like, your schedule and what you did last year do not make sense based on this year. That's okay if you fall backwards. So the Vikings doing it, whatever, especially on the last year of Kirk Cousins' contract. But the Chargers, that's depressing because now, like, we're
in
asking
the AFC, you're screwed.
Yeah, and how long can Brandon Staley even stick around? Like, does he have beyond this year if they miss the playoffs? No, probably not. No, so it's so much more disappointing than the Vikings.
All right, one game down, two more to go. Do want to shout out the chat. Several people in the chat already reserved their spots for the Listener League. Richie Smalls, Sean Walters. Yeah, $5. Again, take that down, get some bragging rights. Winner takes it to get himself 1 week free of RT Premium. Alvin pointing out that, yeah, I got this email as well. I don't think it's email worthy, but DK let me know that they did add Kareem Hunt to the player pool. I'm not going to play him, but it's good to know. Thank you for the email. So maybe they'll do the same for Cam Akers. Game number two, Atlanta. Another game in the dome. Atlanta at Detroit, 46.5 is the total. Montgomery's currently what? He's got a thigh, questionable. We've heard mixed reports. It seemed like he thought it would be longer. Didn't he say several weeks or something like that? And somebody else say he's day-to-day. We'll see as far as his injury going forward. Certainly integral when it comes to this game, Atlanta at Detroit. Cordell Patterson is off the injury report as well. Are we finally going to see the Joker unleashed, whatever that is? I don't know. It's a run. That's what it is. It's a run play of some sort. Rich, where do you want to start as far as Atlanta, Detroit?
Yeah, a lot of interesting pieces in this game. But main thing is like the injury stuff, like you said. I mean, we've got now the Lions entering this game potentially. I think we're assuming David Montgomery's not going to play. I think it sounds pretty doubtful that he will. So what does that do for Jahmyr Gibbs? Like, Jahmyr Gibbs is going to get this run out, but is it going to be the run out people expect? And on DraftKings, he's been consistently expensive to start the year. Like, he was already priced ahead of David Montgomery the opening 2 weeks of the season. Because we saw when he came in, he played one snap of pass protection and got absolutely bulldozed and gave up a pressure, almost gave up a sack on it. He did not run in between the tackles at all, but he did get the targets that we wanted. You know, he caught 7 of 9 targets, didn't do a lot with them. But like, how do the Lions deploy him? Like, I doubt it's going to be a situation like where we saw DeAndre Swift get that run out, like with Kenneth Gainwell out last week. I think we will see Craig Reynolds in like short yardage spots. I think we will see Craig Reynolds in some pass protection spots. We could even see Zonovan Knight a little bit too. So how we handle Jahmyr Gibbs, I think, is probably like the starting point here. And then will we have Amon-Ra St. Brown in this game as well? We haven't gotten official word exactly what happened to him. Almost everyone thinks he had turf toe, but they haven't come out and said it. He went to the sideline, got a steel plate in his shoe and got his toe taped up, but he didn't practice today. So we're kind of waiting for further clarity on that situation too. He did miss a ton of snaps last year, obviously when he had the high ankle injury, and Jared Goff really was the same quarterback with and without Amon-Ra St. Brown. But not having Amon-Ra St. Brown definitely would funnel more targets to you, like a Jahmyr Gibbs or a Sam Laporta. And we've already seen Josh Reynolds be kind of a useful player. So we're starting on like the Lions injury side, and not only on offense, but they lost CJ Gardner-Johnson for the season. They lost James Houston last week to an ankle injury. Lions had a really rough week too.
How many injuries have to happen for you to consider I know you didn't say Marvin Jones. Like, I was, we're never rostering him ever again, right? It was a good run.
But someone in the chat didn't want Marv Erasure last week, so maybe they're getting it. They willed this.
I mean, it's not like they priced up Josh Reynolds on DraftKings at least too much. He was 3,700 last week. He was in the winning Millie Maker lineup on the opposite side of Geno Smith. And that he's 4,200 now, given what he's done so far, I don't think it's bad at all, especially if we already take his floor. He's averaging 17.8 PPR points per game. He has the team's only end zone target through 2 weeks. And if we think that Amon-Ra may be even hobbled, since he only ran around on 74% of dropbacks last week, Josh Reynolds has the ceiling if this game gets pushed, because we also don't know what the hell the Falcons defense is. They've played the Panthers, and then last week's game against Jordan Love, and Jordan Love wasn't good, but he yet again threw for 3 touchdowns. So, like, what even are the Falcons? I think their defense is better than what they've showed so far, what they've played, but we just don't know.
The Gibbs thing, like, what's the most amount of touches they'll allow him to have? Like, it certainly feels like a spot where Reynolds is going to siphon, like, 2 goal line touchdowns, and, like, Twitter is going to, like, lose its mind. What do we expect? What do we expect here, John, out of Gibbs? Is this the top 2 running backs in the draft? I think it is, right? Is that a little narrative for you? Number 1 and number 2?
It's not a narrative. It's just factually correct.
Well, yes. We can create one. I'm sure these guys know it.
It was, in fact, the top 2 running backs in the draft, actually taken number 8 and number 12 overall. Yes.
Yeah.
But also, I guess it's somewhat annoying because Jahmyr Gibbs' salary is right there, just slap in the middle on DraftKings at 6,600, where everyone wants to play him for the pass catching upside, where you do need him to get a run out of the carries to reach that. But also, we know what he's going to have in terms of the targets. Like, even with Dave Montgomery, he's now seen 11 of their 13 backfield targets for the Lions, 85% of their running back targets. They're not going anywhere else anyways. They weren't going anywhere else before. What the really question is, how much of his now running back carry share increases? Because when Montgomery left the game, he and Craig Reynolds, Jahmyr Gibbs, split carries 3-3. So does Reynolds fall into this, or at least similar to Montgomery's 18.5 carries in the first 2 games? I don't know. But either way, it seems like he may get enough of a bump to where we would still want to play him, even in stacks with Jared Goff, if we're playing this game.
Yeah, your thoughts on that, Rich? My thought is, I think Gibbs' best chance to get the highest upside game is for Detroit to be playing catch up. And if they're up this game like by 10 with 5 minutes to go, I'm afraid it's going to be more, if not more Reynolds, at least half Reynolds grinding the game down. Your thoughts as far as that optimum Gibbs, I think, is like, you know, they're behind. Obviously, if Amon's not playing, you know, one more guy they can kind of dump the ball off to. And Atlanta is just going to want to grind this clock as much as possible, run the ball all day long. That's how they run their offense. But that's the best Gibbs, right, if they're behind, but they're probably not going to be, according to the line at least. You never know.
I mean, maybe. What if they just can't run the ball and they have to go with, like, an aggressive pass attack, like, right? Because that outcome exists too. Like, you know, Gibbs is not – in college, he had the lowest rate of running backs in his draft class. They were inside runs. He didn't run well between the tackles on his small opportunity last week. And, like, Craig Reynolds is Craig Reynolds. Like, what if they just can't run the ball and they have to, like, deploy, like, this short passing attack? That's another run out for him too. I know this. Twitter's going to win either way. Gibbs is either awesome and, like, people say, see, this is why I should be getting touches, or like Craig Reynolds is like a thorn as like a goal line carrying people, like, see, like, this is why, like, Gibbs is who, like, it, Twitter's going to win either way. There's a win-win for the old tweet machine. They're going to be on it. Probably the one guy we didn't talk about that could benefit too out of this is Sam Laporta, right? Like, he's just hanging around that 4K mark, like, still in a palatable range for tight ends. It's been a miserable start for tight ends in fantasy. So it's like, do you really want to even ever pay up at tight end this year? Is it going to be one of those years? But he's still, like, really favorable. He hasn't run, like, a ton of routes, but he's been really good, and we've seen him flash last week, you know, that yards after the catch ability that he had at Iowa. But he's tight end 10 in terms of team target share. If we don't get Amon-Ra, There's an opportunity for some more targets there too. And Atlanta, you know, hasn't been particularly good against tight ends. They have only faced Hayden Hurst and Luke Musgrave, but they have a lot of, 10 of 13 targets be completed against them, the tight end. So Sam LaPorta is probably on the radar too for this game.
You'd probably rather play LaPorta than Kyle Pitts on the other side. LaPorta is actually more expensive than Kyle Pitts, and justifiably so. I think he's supposed to be.
What ownership do you have for Kyle Pitts? Because $3,900 is literally the lowest salary of his career. So I'm curious where you have him coming in now.
I'll pull it up, and obviously, grain of salt, it's a Wednesday night. But I did see Mark Andrews was the guy that was hitting the most optimal as I was running earlier, which was kind of
interesting. It's going to be single-digit percent ownership for sure.
So let's see. We have Andrews, Kelsey, Ertz is getting 9%. Is 17
people are done with this. I'm not even saying he's not a bad play. Like, go ahead and do it for $3,900. It's a tight end. But, I'm telling you, the public, they're still not going to play him.
LaPorta at 4%. I'm still scrolling down, by the way. I started at the top. Kyle Pitts, as of right now, on a Wednesday night, again, this will change. It's fluid. It gets more refined at 0.3% ownership. Right? Jonnu Smith is also getting 0.3% ownership. So, there you go. And isn't Jonnu getting more work, at least the last couple of games? He's 2.5, by the way. Not that I'm saying you should play Jonnu Smith, but he is 2.5. He's a guy who could get the end zone at 2.5, which is
We're now 29 games into Kyle Pitts' career. He has 10 top 12 scoring weeks, 5 top 6 scoring weeks at the position. He did run 35 pass routes last week. That was more than any game he ran last season, but only had 2 catches.
Are you touting Kyle Pitts? Am I hearing kind of a half a tout?
I'm saying who cares, right? Like, if you want to play him, play him. He's a $3,900 tight end.
Yeah.
Like, we've all made worse plays at tight end.
I think my point is,
if he doesn't hit, so what? Like, I mean, I played Luke Musgrave last week. Like,
my point is that I'm interested in Desmond Ridder in this slate. And Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes are going to tell me to hold their beer, and they're going to shove it in my face and say, actually, we are good at quarterbacking again. But right now, I don't know if I'm scared of any quarterbacks in the NFL because scoring is so low as a whole. Like, if we are going to attack low-priced options and Desmond Ridder is only 5K in a game I perceive to perhaps be high scoring, and then I can allocate that salary elsewhere, it would be in the first month of the season when everyone's still knocking off the rust and figuring out who the hell they are within their offenses. And if that's the case, and we think this game is a little bit high scoring, we saw some friskiness from Ridder last week, down by 2 scores, got pressured into 10 carries, 39 yards and a touchdown as a rushing quarterback with a high floor, scored 22 fantasy points as the QB12 on the week. If that's the case in this one, I think we can at least, like, without even taking chances, say, oh, I can play a 5K quarterback and I can stack him with a popular Bijan Robinson and either Drake London or Kyle Pitts. And so that's why I kind of like Brock Purdy last week. I like Desmond Ridder kind of fitting into stacks this week.
If Minshew plays, you like him better than Minshew at 5-1?
Man, that game, I almost put it as our third because it could be sexy. I'm not sure yet. We'll talk about that game a lot at the end. I think I personally like Ridder more, but it would come down to ownership, and I'm going to wait and see where the line and handles go by Sunday morning.
One more question for both you guys, whoever has an answer for this. You know, I'm sure you've heard it before, like a lot of, you're not allowed to play 2 running backs against each other in the same game. I'm told the analytics people say it's not allowed, but I feel like this is one of those games where you can do it. You can play Gibbs and Bijan in the same game and be okay. And that's a general rule, and I know I've certainly broken it before. I understand why it's out there, but does anybody have a thought? A thought on that rule in general, and can we break it with Gibbs and Robinson? I'm throwing it out to the floor if anybody wants it.
Okay, man, Bijan looks so good. I feel like we're doing like this weird thing, though. Like, he's not getting enough touches, and we haven't seen Patterson play. Like, I could just totally see Arthur Smith doing something dumb at some point when Bijan's like a pop-up. Jesus, he's so damn good.
Yeah, and the thing is, if they don't pass the ball, I guess they can support 2 running backs. But now Patterson's going to get something, I imagine. And then Ridder, I guess, is going to pass the ball 20 times or so, depending on. You have a thought on that, John, or is this kind of a stay away for you? I'm just, It's just something kind of.
I think the biggest problem with the Atlanta side here is that I think they're live dogs. Like, that's the thing. Okay. I don't think that they get flooded here. So, like, are we going to get the amount of dropbacks that we had last week? I mean, Ritter had 38 dropbacks. That was a career high. You need the Lions if we don't have Amon-Ra and they're not able to run the football. And, like do they pull away? Like, it's going to be interesting to see what happens here in this game script. I definitely think the Falcons are live dogs here.
Mm-hmm.
3.5, is that what we're looking at right now?
3.5. I do wonder if it gets to 3. If it doesn't, that makes me feel a little more confident that they didn't want to come down.
I think Amon-Ra would move. Like, not a lot of players move it a ton, right? Like, generally it's quarterbacks. But I think he would move that a half a point, I think. If he doesn't play or if he's hobbled or whatever, we'll see.
I do like Drake London in this game too. You know, you can do whatever you want with Bijan. We'll see on Cordarrelle Patterson. Wasn't CPAT clear from the injury report last Friday too? And they still scratched
him? He might have been. Yeah, he might have been.
Either way though, Geno Smith passed for 328 yards last week against the Lions with his two backup tackles we talked about, but only 84 yards came in the slot. He went 19 of 21 outside the hash marks, and that's where London has lined up for the most part. He's only ran 8 routes from the slot all year. That's been Kyle Pitts, who's running 50% of his routes from the slot, 30 total. And so if we're thinking about just targeting the boundary here, because that's where the Lions have been susceptible now, it would be Drake London for me. So I want to get a piece of this game right now. Again, I'm watching the total. I think it's very, very interesting, but we'll see which way it goes.
All right. Game number 3, John, you picked it. It sounds like you're kind of like going back and forth with the Indianapolis game as well, which I'm sure we'll touch on when we're doing our play, you know, positional stuff. Game number 3, Denver. Denver coming out here to Miami. They are, 6-point dogs here versus the Dolphins. 48.5 is the total. We have Jalen Waddle currently in the concussion protocol. He's questionable. I believe Salvin Ahmed also questionable for Miami. John, your thoughts is I have a general thought as far as this game, and we'll get to that later. But I'm curious where you want to start. Why this game?
Hold on. What is your general thought? Because it sounds like it's the opposite of my general thought.
Well, my general thought is I grew up in South Florida. It's not the greatest. There's two cheat codes in football. Well, the biggest one in the NFL is Miami. We'll talk about that in a second. The biggest one in college is Boise State in their blue uniforms, their blue field. That is the most cheating thing ever. It's so cheating. It's the biggest scam ever. It's the biggest home field advantage. But the biggest home field advantage in the NFL is Miami getting to play home games in this ridiculous humidity. I'm in South Florida right now. You think I'm going outside? No way. In September, there's no chance. So I'm sure you know this. There's a roof now on the Hard Rock Stadium. It covers the Miami team, the football team. Their side is in the shade. The opponents are in the scalding humidity. They're not going to last 4 quarters.
I can't even believe it's allowed. They're allowed. Like, this design is allowed. It's like so – they're even hiding it.
No, it's blatant. And, like, I don't know if it's baked in. I'm sure Vegas is aware of it. You know, they're very, very sharp there. The lines are very sharp lines.
I looked into it, though, when I was doing, like, worksheet stuff. And, like, as far as, like, covering the spread and stuff, it's, like, not, like, it's not, like, an outlier. But it's crazy, though.
Well, it's because the probably adjusted because of it. And they're, the wins and losses are certainly a thing, right? They've won a bunch of games.
I looked into it. It's, like, in recent years, it's not so one-sided as I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
And what's funny is, like, Denver had one of these ongoing trends, like teams playing early in the season in Denver, and they lost 2 games to Denver already. So, I mean, they're another one of those AFC teams that, like, you know, for as much as they had aspirations of turnaround, like, they're probably cooked if they lose this game as well.
Yeah. They're going to be cooked, and they're going to be cooked because it is not a joke. You do not want to be out there for 3 hours, and it's completely unfair. But, Miami is going to win this game, and I think they win it by at least 10. And that's one of my.
It's wild that they that they're allowed from like a design, like a stadium design, do this because it's like they completely cover their side of the field.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Cowboys open their windows and make the sun shine in on their own offense.
Yes.
Why do we keep losing? I don't get it.
All right, well, Dean, I'll combat that and say the Broncos' offense has not been the problem so far. That's kind of why I like this game and I like the over. Denver's actually given us all the ingredients for the perfect dirty martini, the perfect cocktail, because their offense is potent. they have scored a touchdown on the fifth highest rate of their drives through two games. The issue is that, and whether it sustains or not, since they have star players, I don't know. But right now, their defense has been putrid. 29th in pressure rate. They're blitzing at the league's ninth highest rate. They're fresh off 35 points allowed to Commanders. Even the Raiders finished top seven in touchdown rate on their seven possessions in week one. And Russell Wilson now, he's had some soft matchups, but I still think it's a funny trend that in his last four games without Nathaniel Hackett, he's averaged 21.9 fantasy points. So I do think the pieces are here to kind of make this like the over that no one looks at, kind of like the Commanders and Broncos last week. It was such a low total. And I thought the Broncos were so bad on defense. Like, what if Sam Howell just does anything and that game pops? I think that maybe could be the same thing here, since we also have all the faith in the world in Miami's offense doing their part.
By the way, our chat is jumping in here as far as the conversation. Yeah, the Dolphins tend to wear white at home as well. And they're referencing that game last year. You guys probably remember, Rich, remember the game last year at Buffalo. They were like falling, they were collapsing on the sidelines.
Cramping game.
Once the fourth quarter hits, like they couldn't hang. And Buffalo was a huge favorite. They're the unstoppable offense. And Miami just shut them down.
Buffalo ran like 75 plays that game too.
Yeah,
that happened in the Chiefs-Jaguars game this past Sunday too. I had no idea it was going to be 120 humidity index on the field. And like every player was cramping in that one.
Are we going to play, like, for whatever, if Waddle doesn't go, are we thinking about Braxton Berrios and Ren Craycraft? Are we having this conversation? Or it's just like, Tyreek's going to get everything, and then like it's going to be just ridiculous. What do we have here, Rich, as far as who's receivers? We don't know as far as Waddle.
Since the start of last year, Tyreek's run 95 pass routes with Jalen Waddle off the field. On those routes, he's been targeted 43.2% of the time.
Amazing.
4.4 yards per route run. Has four of his touchdowns. So I do think that, Mike McDaniel's just shown consistently, like, he's going to find ways to get Tyreek Hill the football. What we really like about the opening two games at Mike McDaniel is he had answers to the test, right? We were waiting to see how he's going to calibrate his game, for the middle of the field stuff against the Chargers. He does it. Week two, they come back. The Patriots play like a totally different game than they played against the Eagles. They play a lot of zone coverage. They're trying to take stuff away outside the numbers and vertically. And Mike McDaniel just dials up the run scheme, and it's a Raheem Mostert game. And that's what we love to see. We want to see this offense have the answers to the test, and it puts you in a box, especially against this team like Denver. Like Daigle said, their defense has been one of the biggest letdowns to the start of the season. They've been awful. Outside of Patrick Surtain, like, it's just been miserable. They can't rush the passer. Their second cornerback, I forget his name, but he's been getting absolutely destroyed so far. It's just you attack with the way what Miami has shown, like, they're just going to have answers. Damari Mathis is his name.
Yeah.
In his coverage, 15 to 17 targets to be completed, three touchdowns allowed already. I think what's interesting here is that Daigle likes Russell Wilson when he's literally doing the same thing Jordan Love is doing. The Denver offense has sneakily not been good. They've really overachieved. Mm. They're living on big plays, but on like a drive consistency basis, they've been bad. They've been really bad, and they've been really bad in the second half of both games. Russell Wilson has a touchdown on 11.2% of his completions. Only Jordan Love is higher. League rate is 6.1%. So like, he's definitely living his best life. And sometimes that's just how regression works in the NFL. Russ had like a really down season, and sometimes you root to run hot the next year, like, and it evens out, right? That's how the mean gets regressed. So maybe he'll keep this up, but it is interesting that, like, because even going back to last year when Nathaniel Hackett was fired, like, Russ was really good for fantasy those games, but was still really bad at quarterbacking in those games. Like, the one week he had two rushing touchdowns, the next week he only completed 50% of his passes but had three passing touchdowns. He's doing a lot of weird stuff. Like, we haven't seen Russ like completely get back to and play like a lot of really good wire-to-wire quarterback yet. So I still do have like some kind of questions of what we're going to get, because they've played two uneven games so far this season. The second half of both games, he's been really, really miserable. So it is going to be interesting to see if the Dolphins do get out to a big lead, what kind of consistency we get out of the Broncos offense.
What you're doing is spotting my theory of how to get Tyreek Hill and Justin Jefferson in lineups this week by spending down at quarterback. That's all you're discussing, is taking on the volatility to get up to those two players who I think are the most important players in this slate.
Yeah, I don't mind if you do attack the Denver side and you hope for the run out. I mean, no one's gonna really play these guys at this point.
This game is fun.
Yeah, I don't know who you'll get. I mean, but we have full confidence that Miami's gonna, like, hook or crook, doesn't matter if Waddle's in the lineup or not. Like, they're gonna score points.
Yes, that's where I'm at. I like Mostert a good bit too. The Mims thing is so weird because what did he run, like, 6 routes the last game and had 2 big catches? And I don't.
He's ran 20 routes in 2 games, a route on just 23% of dropbacks, and he leads the team in receiving yards because he's Marvin freaking Mims. That's how good he is.
Then they bring Jaleel McLaughlin. He plays 3 snaps but gets a red zone touch. Like, I mean, it's just the weirdest.
Their only carry inside the 10, and he gets it. Amazing.
Then he doesn't play the rest of the game. Like, he converts a red zone carry for a touchdown, then just doesn't play. Really wild. Really wild.
It has to change at some point, right, going forward. I don't know if it's going to happen today or this week, but theoretically, or maybe not. I don't know. That's just,
I mean, this team called, this is a team that the day before week one brought little Jordan Humphrey off the practice squad, and he ran more. He doubled Marvin Mims in pass routes. It's, I don't know what the hell's going on, man. Can we explain anything that's going on in Denver?
Yeah, coaching edge goes to Miami. Can we say that fairly in this game?
You already have, like, Sean Payton backtracking. I like, because, you know, he had the commentary that, like, Nathaniel Hackett was, like, the worst. The worst coaching job because they couldn't get plays in, and literally they can't get plays in now. So he's got to walk back and talk about Russell Wilson wearing a wristband this week, potentially. Like, it's just, it's hilarious, man.
McDaniel's my 1-1. I don't know, but I haven't done, like, the power rankings for coaches. I just love him. I think he's got a great personality. I think
he's amazing. You hear his interview before halftime last week? Incredible stuff.
Yeah, spectacular. Yeah, he's so good. He's so good.
They asked him what he was doing. He's like, I didn't do anything. The players are doing it. That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear from a coach. And on the Jordan Rodriguez podcast, he was saying the same stuff. He was like, I've called a lot of great plays that failed and a lot of shitty plays that ended up being awesome. Like, he was just like, he's a breath of fresh air for head coaching, man. Mm-hmm.
Yes, not a talking head, not just giving those robotic answers. By the way, since I'm concocting narratives, you mentioned Patrick Surtain. Where did his dad play for so many years? At Miami. There you go. He's probably going to be in the stands, right? Anything else as far as this game we should mention? How much do we like Mostert? I can see Mostert just grind this game down and Denver's defense getting tired and breaking one. He's gonna break a 50-yarder. There's your bold call, right? Clip this one, producer Steve. We're going to be showing it Sunday night. Mostert gets loose, 50-yard touchdown. Who's with me?
Sure, man. Why not? I mean, if Ahmed's not going to play, they're not playing Devin Achane. And listen, Raheem Mostert has shown, like, he's not here for a long time. He's here for a good time. And, like, we're catching him, like, fresh at the start of the season. He hasn't gotten nicked up yet. Like, we're going to ride this thing while we can.
And I may, again, I don't know how I'm going to play this game just yet, but I'm very interested in this game. Jerry Jeudy came back and looked at least a little hobbled on the field, but was still a full-time player, ran around on 84% of dropbacks. And the slot is where Miami has been most susceptible this year. And then Javonte Williams' touch share, and trust me, Javonte Williams has not looked good on these touches so far. But since the preseason, he's been targeted on 42% of his routes, and his touch share increased from week one, 57% with Samaje Perine, to 74% in week two. Maybe they use Jaleel McLaughlin again inside the 10-yard line for their only touch, but we don't know. So at 5,500 on DraftKings, I may fuck around and find out. We don't know just yet. So that's kind of where I'm at right now with this game.
Rich, 2 quick questions from the chat that are relevant to this game. First, Richie Smalls wants to know Brandon Johnson as a cheap option. That seems like too much of a deep cut for me. He's probably also in front of Marvin Mims in the depth chart, but
He only ran a route on 61% of the dropbacks last week. He caught 2 passes. Both were touchdowns. Like, this is the Broncos in a nutshell this year so far through 2 weeks. Like, this is exactly like what we're getting.
And Tank Dell is like 3,600. We still have some cheap options here that DraftKings left behind. So you just go to them.
Oh, Tank's going to be really popular this week, isn't he? One more here, Rich. Lauren wants to know if you're picking one, Jefferson or Tyreek. It sounds like John wants to play them both. Is there a qualifier? Like, if Waddle
like
doesn't
Tyreek.
Go, then Tyreek?
I'll put my vote in. I like Tyreek.
If Waddle doesn't play, I say Tyreek. But, I mean, is there a wrong answer here?
Yeah.
I mean, after you flip over the cards and the games are played, sure. But pre-flop, no. It's the 2 really, really strong hands.
I think the Minnesota game environment is probably better. But also, I mean, if Waddle doesn't play, like, I just read, like, the dude getting a target on 44% of his routes. Like, that's those are Puka Nacua numbers.
that seems like a lot. All right, that is our three games. We're going to talk about our favorite plays position by position in just a second. Do want to shout out Ticketmaster. More memories are made when you're there for live NFL action. And when you need tickets, Ticketmaster, they got you covered as the official marketplace of the NFL. Ticketmaster gives you more ways to find your perfect seat. Their interactive seat map gives you 360-degree previews of your section to make sure you have the best view of those pivotal plays. And if your plans happen to change, Ticketmaster, they give you more flexibility to sell or transfer your tickets. Plus, mobile tickets make getting in on game day a breeze, and you can even customize your Ticketmaster app to rep your team's colors. Find tickets today at Ticketmaster.com/NFL. All right, Rich, I'll let you start. Quarterback-wise, amongst the quarterbacks on teams we've not yet discussed, who is most interesting to you in week three?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I think we covered some of the chalky guys. We're going to see Lamar Jackson's going to be really popular. Week two was universal. A lineman being out did not matter. Kirk Cousins was missing Garrett Bradbury and Christian Darrisaw. Lamar Jackson was missing Tyler Linderbaum and Ronnie Stanley. Geno Smith was missing both of his tackles. And like, I think that those situations scared some gamers off all the above, and all those guys smashed. So I don't know what that has to do with anything. I thought that was interesting, a little interesting kind of play out, how all those guys really hit last week. But the Colts have been really good against the run, and they're just really bad on the back end. Like, we kind of knew coming in, like, this was a young secondary. They didn't really have the pieces yet, and they've gotten kind of flooded through 2 weeks. Trevor Lawrence was the QB8 against them. C.J. Stroud last week was the QB11, and he was only the QB11 because the week was so high scoring. He actually had more points than Trevor Lawrence did in the week one matchup. He had 21.5 points. They're allowing 7.9 yards per pass attempt, the 5.1% touchdown rate. And that's before we even get to like any of the rushing you're going to get from Lamar Jackson. So, he definitely stands out. And then the other guy I'll talk about is a guy. He might just be bad at football now, right? Deshaun Watson. Is he just bad at football?
It's bad. It's bad.
This is the test. It's it right here.
Yeah. Right. This is it. He looks like he just has no feel for the game. Like, the dude's leaving clean pockets. Like, he's running. He's errant throws. Only Jordan Love has a higher inaccuracy rate. To be give credit to Watson, at least he's, like, throwing the ball downfield at, like, an alarming rate. But only Zach Wilson has completed a lower rate of passes. Only Joe Burrow and Bryce Young have fewer yards per pass attempt. I mentioned Jordan Love is the only one with a higher inaccuracy rate. But if there is ever a time... The Tennessee Titans, right? Like, they're just such a pass funnel, tried and true. They've already got 300 passing yards to Derek Carr and Justin Herbert. Like, if you've got to give him one more week, like, it's got to be this one, right?
Yeah. I mean, with Cleveland's giving them, like, how many more years? They're married to a bit.
And I tweeted out the stats earlier, and someone was like, we need more than two games. And I was like, well, we're like on like game eight, you know, game two, game eight, like, whatever you got to say.
Yeah, we've given him the excuses of rust and weather and every possible excuse, but maybe he's just bad now. If Richardson's healthy, I think he's an interesting play as well. He's in a concussion protocol. He was fully prepared to break the slate last week with two rushing touchdowns, I believe, in the first quarter. Probably outscored half the quarterbacks that played four quarters. John, who do you have it's worth talking about? And I kind of teased it earlier. I was curious, if Richardson doesn't go, is Minshew somebody that's worth talking about? And I guess Mahomes, Probably going to put up a lot of points. Can Chicago keep up? A disaster there. They lost their defensive coordinator. Fields has been terrible as well. I don't know what they're, what, almost two touchdown dogs here in this game. Will Mahomes have to pass in the third or fourth quarter? We'll see. But I feel like he's going to be kind of lost on the slate for that reason, because people don't really have any run backs on the Chicago side necessarily. Although Roschon Johnson, yeah, that's a sneaky one there for the people. Yeah, quarterbacks for John. What do you have?
Pretty much the same pool. If anything, Richardson being ruled out, I don't think it's a detriment to the Colts. They're running two different defenses, and Gardner Minshew just steps in and runs an offense he's very familiar with. It was with totally different weapons in Philadelphia. I understand that. But still, two of his last four starts, he's been the QB7 and QB9 under Steichen. So we think he can get some push. And really, that's just trying to give me a reason to roster Lamar Jackson on the other side of the ball, since we still don't know anything about Baltimore's defense. Like, so far about Baltimore, they played C.J. Stroud in his debut, and then Joe Burrow and that Bengals offense. Literally, Dean, you watched the Panthers on Monday night, and the Panthers are averaging more yards per play than the Bengals. That's how bad the Bengals have been. So, like, I don't think the Ravens have played anyone without Marcus Williams and Marlon Humphrey so far. So maybe Gardner Minshew still pushes the ball against them. So yeah, Lamar Jackson actually is still sexy no matter what happens with Anthony Richardson. My only one, you mentioned it. It was Patrick Mahomes. And sometimes it's as simple as the Bears allowing 9.2 yards per attempt to Jordan Love and Baker Mayfield. Sometimes it's that easy. And what we're really doing is, like, we're just waiting to play either Justin Fields or the quarterback opposite Justin Fields. Because as bad as he's been, like, he's still close to popping for fantasy. He's still close to going jailbreak Justin Fields and, like, turning a game into a 60-point outcome, because he's averaging 33 pass attempts per game. I don't know why they're trying to turn him into Joe Montana rather than allowing him to be Justin Fields. Connor had a tweet earlier this week about two design carries for him so far. It makes no sense whatsoever. But that's kind of where I come down at, is like, well, if we do think Justin Fields can get some push, and Chris Jones, even as a limited player, still had 5 pressures, 2 sacks, was like literally the X factor for that Chiefs defense that we figured he would be. If you think we get some push, though, then yes, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, don't even worry about their wide receivers at all, are going to be low enough owned in this slate where you can just single stack them and then figure out what to do after that.
All right, John.
You can't play Justin Jefferson or Tyreek Hill if you play Patrick Mahomes.
That's true, and that sucks.
We do live in the world of a salary cap, and decisions have to be made for sure. On a Wednesday night, Jerome Ford's getting 42% of the ownership currently. He's 4-8 on DK. He was in a Monday night game where the prices were already set, so DK could not even adjust. FanDuel could not adjust. He's going to be super cheap, but he has that bad matchup there against Tennessee. Hunt's coming in, but I don't think that's going to matter much. I think Ford is the clear guy, but, like, will he be efficient? Will he be able to do anything? And then Zach Moss. I think I talked about Zach Moss in this show. I know I talked about other stuff, but I think I talked about him last week. Did not expect him to have 98% snap share and be the only running back getting the ball. That's how bad Jackson was week one.
They don't like two fumbles. The Colts do not want to see you have two fumbles. They'll get rid of you.
If his role is, like, he's on the field every single time, Moss at 5.5K still seems pretty cheap. He can catch the ball as well. I think he would benefit from Minshew. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. Either one of you guys, if you have a thought. Richardson at the goal line, better chance to run it in. Scrambling quarterback tend to, like, not go to the running back as a dump off. So my thought is, if you like Moss, I think you'd like him a little bit more with Minshew. Would you agree with that, Rich? I'm just kind of throwing it out there. I don't know if there's any data to back that up, but in my head, I feel like I'd prefer Minshew at quarterback for Moss.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you get a little chance for maybe some targets, and you don't get the goal line siphoned. Baltimore has been really good against the run. This is kind of a multi-year sample, but you can't really – if a guy's going to be on the field 100% of the snaps and get 100% of the touches, say, what do you do, man? You just take it and you say whatever. I try to luck box into a touchdown. Well, hopefully he grabs a few passes and we get on our way out of there and he hits value. So I don't really have a problem with going back to Zach Moss, although it's ugly. Jerome Ford, I mean, this is 3 weeks in a row, right? Third time's a charm for everybody. Are they going to do it? For week one, it was Jamal Williams. Week two, it was Josh Kelly. This week, it's Jerome Ford. It's kind of funny how that works. I mean, the Browns run game is good enough to where you can maybe give them like a step of faith, but like, I mean, no, look at the game logs against Tennessee, like going back to last year. Like, what's the absolute like ceiling here? Like, you hope you get a touchdown, right? Jerome Ford does have a little bit of pass catching ability. I'm curious to see like what Hunt does. My feeling is like it's going to be like, because remember, this team already chose Jerome Ford over Kareem Hunt at a point this offseason. So I think Hunt's going to come back to kind of like the similar role that he was in last year. Because remember, he lost, like, he was no longer like the 1B back last year. He got pushed to basically being a passing down back at a point last year. Nick Chubb actually had the highest share of his touches that he had in his career. So I'm curious to see if just Hunt goes back to like that version of that role, and we get Jerome Ford's like clearly a lesser version of Nick Chubb in that role. So that's kind of what I'm expecting, but we'll see what shakes out. It's a really rough run out here for Jerome Ford. We're going to put this to the test because he's got Titans this week. I think Ravens next week. And I think they have a bye, and then they play the 49ers. So like, we're going to really test this thing out.
John, what's your thoughts as far as this Hunt chalk? It'll help you get Tyreek and Jefferson. There's some other cheap running backs too we could talk about as well.
So does Desmond Ridder, so it's fine. I don't want to do it again. I mean, we didn't do Josh Kelly last week. We talked about this, how you just literally can't play him. What does $200 difference matter except for it being an entirely different slate? Like, I guess that's the argument we're trying to make here, but no. Objectively, it just doesn't make sense at all. Why would you play him? Especially if Kareem Hunt's active.
Yeah, well, I mean, and Strong is still there too, and he's probably going to get a little bit, I'd imagine. They both got snaps last week, obviously. And there's some other situations. By the way, I don't know if you guys caught this. I just caught it right before we went live. Justice Hill is apparently questionable. And they signed
Kenyon Drake today.
Yeah.
Oh, no. They have Kenyon Drake and Melvin Gordon. What year is this team being constructed?
Remember, Kenyon Drake led them in rushing last year.
And 2021. 2021, Devonta Freeman led them in fantasy points. He was the RB48 per game because they signed him off the street and just said, we trust you the most.
So the Drake signing, is that kind of signal that Hill's probably going to be out and Edwards 1, Gordon 2, and then maybe they dress Drake?
The problem also, though, is that especially on DraftKings, like, we were lied to. We heard all offseason through training camp they were going to pass their running backs more, and we didn't necessarily believe it, but because it's Lamar Jackson, he still is Lamar Jackson, but they're literally 31st in running back target rate right now. Like, they're just not giving it to the guys, and Gus Edwards has never for his career been a guy who earns targets anyhow, so you're really just hoping for a FanDuel run out more than anything.
Can we tell ourselves
those guys are all touchdown, or the Ravens running backs, whoever you get, is like, you got to get touchdowns out of those guys.
I think the only one you can play is Edwards if you're playing one. I mean, there's no chance I'm playing. Is Drake even in the player pool? I don't know. I'm not playing Melvin Gordon. I'm not drinking Merlot. I'm not doing any of that. The New Orleans situation, Kamara still not walking through that door just yet. He's going to be back week 4, I believe. Tony Jones and Kendre Miller. It looks like Kendre Miller is going to come back this week. Mm-hmm. Jamal Williams probably not going to play. Is there a scenario? Miller was close that week. Is there a scenario where Miller like gets like a big chunk right out the gate, or are they going to kind of baby him? He's really cheap. That's why 4-3 on DK, kind of interesting.
See, 4-3 is how you catch my attention, even if you get 6 touches. It's like, well, what if I just don't care what you do because you're 4-3? It's very much like Dean. I'm going to tap into my brain of the one time I played MLB a DFS and FanDuel accidentally made that player $1. And they kept it on the slate, and everyone played him, and he scored a 0, but he was in the winning Millie Maker that night. Because again, what do you get with that salary? Do you remember who that player was?
Well, I know Enrique Kike Hernandez many years ago was mispriced on FanDuel. Are you sure this happened on DraftKings?
No, I said FanDuel. Yes, that's
okay.
Yes,
that's probably who it was. He was $200, and like the floor is like $2,000.
Cool,
and he opens stuff up for you. In baseball, you can get a 0 and still.
But 4,300 compared to a 5K being the next running back we're talking about, that's still quite a bit of savings in this slate.
Am I telling myself a story as far as New Orleans? I think that's one of the worst games as far as like pace. I think that's the slowest pace game of the week. Hold on, maybe I'm wrong.
The Packers are doing their thing again, where they're just miserable. Christian Watson looks like he might play though, so it might help a little bit, but I mean, I have a hard time believing they're going to give Kendre Miller a big workload. You know, he's a guy that really didn't play passing downs in college at all. So he's kind of a work in progress. He looked great in the preseason, the little bit we saw of him. But I mean, Taysom Hill's still a tight end on DraftKings. Like, is he in play? I mean, he had 9 carries last
year. Yeah. Yeah. I think he's very much in play.
He out-carried Tony Jones 3-1 until they had no choice because they didn't have another running back on the roster. And then they gave Tony Jones all the carries. And he did nothing with them, but he fell 4 for touchdowns.
Because that's the thing, even if Kendre Miller, and you can play him at 4-3, whatever, if you catch a few passes and he has a big play, you hit. But if they get to the goal line, like, he's probably not doing anything.
I think my point is, Dean, and again, I'm still sifting through it. We'll see what we need, what kind of salary we need to save. But also my point of the slate is that I like the mid-tier running backs because, like, you couldn't name better runouts for these guys. Like Travis Etienne, like you couldn't pick a better spot for him. Jaguars are 2-score home favorites. He's fresh off getting 88% of their backfield touches because they're so pissed off at Tank Bigsby for not knowing the NFL's rules. And now he's against this Texans defense that's allowed the 8th highest rate of explosive runs. So you have to love Etienne in that spot. And then Kenneth Walker. Like Charbonnet got more touches on the surface, but Walker still handled 72% of their backfield touches in back-to-back games. And his share of the team's running back touches actually increased from the season opener to week 2, 77% of their carries. And like, that would be a fun game to talk about if we had any confidence in the Panthers offense at all, because the Panthers are without J.C. Horn, Shaq Thompson for the rest of the year. They're not going to be able to stop anyone either, but man, they just have no juice. Everyone always likes tweeting like the Patriots 40 times. The Panthers have absolutely nothing to go to. So it just seems like a Ken Walker, roll the red carpet out and get to your 200 yards game.
This is like, we wait for him. Speaking of baseball, Walker is kind of a home run hitter, right? Is this the game where he gets a 60-yard touchdown?
I don't know how they stop anyone. I just don't know what that team is. Again, they're averaging more yards per play for the Bengals, but that's more relative.
Pacheco seems kind of interesting, too, if you're going to buy into KC just, like, walloping Chicago, which they certainly can, and you're not playing Mahomes, and why can't Pacheco get 2 touchdowns?
Missed practice, though, today. He's good. We got to watch. Missed practice. He had a hamstring, so, like, we got to keep tabs on that. No one wants the ghost of Clyde Edwards-Helaire to be a thing.
I missed that. I wouldn't feel confident about CEO.
He was on my short list early, and then I saw the same thing, so then we'll just follow it throughout the week.
Yeah, and McKinnon.
I think Travis Etienne is pretty interesting. You know, you can get kind of cute and then run some weird sacks in that game too with like C.J. Stroud, Nico Collins, Tank Dell, and like Travis Etienne, and then you can fit in your Daigle stack of Justin Jefferson, Tyreek potentially. He's playing the Texans, a team he absolutely roasted last year. Tank Bigsby is not a thing. He didn't have a touch last week. It turns out when you have 2 turnovers that directly lead to points to the other team, that the team doesn't give you touches the next week. But I think it's a pretty much a bounce back spot for the Jaguars offense as a whole, as bad as they've been. I mean, they had some near misses last week. Credit to the Chiefs defense too. You were talking about the Justin Fields, like pushback. Going back to last year, the Chiefs have only allowed 15 passing touchdowns in their past 12 games. They've allowed a league low 6.3 yards per pass attempt. Both Jared Goff and Trevor Lawrence have underperformed to start the year against the Chiefs. They might not be like they're not like a pushover defense. I think that they get kind of like credited as like they play in just like these wide open games. Teams, you know, have to catch up against them. Like their defense is actually pretty good. Maybe we see the Jags bounce back, right? Do you think Travis Etienne, you just play the spot, right? Huge home favorite, like Daigle's playing Kenneth Walker. You play the spot and then you can play the run backs. Because eventually the Texans aren't going to have like 50 dropbacks a game, but as 10-point road favorites, with their offensive line still banged up, looks like they will get Tunsil back here. Like it probably is going to be a huge dropback game again for the Texans.
Just want to mention one more, just acknowledge the existence of Tony Pollard versus Arizona. Speaking of good spots, that feels like a good spot. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard to get Pollard and Hill and Jefferson. You got to make some decisions. And I'm guessing people would probably lean more on the elite receivers than Pollard when it comes to line of construction. But we shall see, especially with the cheapies in the mid-tier at running back looking pretty strong.
If we're getting one more in, Brian Robinson has now averaged 19.8 touches in his last 10 games without J.D. McKissic. Antonio Gibson had that fumble in week one, and since then, Brian Robinson has out-touched Gibson 35-5, and we still have question marks about the Bills defending running backs. They're probably good against the run, but they've played Dalvin Cook and Josh Jacobs to date. And Breece Hall, like the only one we actually respect among that group, like still, obviously on week one, we all remember tagged them for over 100 yards rushing on merely 11 touches. So, yeah.
If you got Josh Jacobs, if you got Josh Jacobs, you'd be feeling real bad because both teams that Josh Jacobs couldn't run against, the other game those teams have played, they've gotten flooded on the ground. Yeah. You know, the Broncos completely bottom up, and then Brian Robinson ran all over them. And then we saw Breece Hall have the explosive runs against the Bills. So really tough when you look at it from like a Josh Jacobs lens. Like ooh.
That's also Rashad White not doing anything in week one against the Bears. And then I'm getting everything confused now. Never mind. Go ahead.
Let's move on and talk about some receivers. We'll get some tight ends in a second as well. We'll talk about our movie selection as well. Receivers that we've not yet talked about, some of the elite ones, Steph Diggs, CeeDee Lamb. We got Lockett, Ridley, Metcalf, Olave, and Green Bay. Some cheapies, I guess, have already been thrown out there as well. Rich, start wherever you want to start as far as some of your favorite receivers, all things considered, in week three.
Yeah, I think the Texans guys are salary guys. If you want, they're just throwing the ball so much that you can get, you're just getting so much opportunity with those guys, and you can save salary. You know, Nico Collins has 40% of the team air yards. And we knew kind of coming into the year that he was kind of a different player than the other wide receivers, right? Robert Woods and Tank Dell, kind of more near the line of scrimmage players. And they have one vertical asset in Nico Collins. I think that obviously Amari Cooper, anyone that plays the Titans, you can kind of look at. The Titans have already allowed four top 24 wide receivers. They've only played two games. They've already allowed three top 12 scoring wide receivers. They've only played two games. And then I think Elijah Moore, like this could be the sneaky spot for him, right? Like people try to get cute in week one with it, but he's run a route on 89%, 84% of the team dropbacks. The results haven't been there, but he's getting a lot of targets per game and they're using him. So this could be kind of like the weird spot to use him in tournaments. And then the other cheap guy is Zay Flowers. We talked about with the Lamar stack, the Colts secondary, like they could just end up being like a weekly target for us. He's been the one constant among the wide receivers. He's run around a 90%, 85% of the team dropbacks. The Colts have already allowed four top 20 scoring wide receivers two have been top scoring, six scoring weeks, three have been top 12 scoring weeks. Again, they've only played two games. You can argue it's just a Mark Andrews game, but I mean, Zay Flowers has a really palatable price too. And Odell has the ankle injury. They're still nursing Rashad Bateman along. I really don't want Nelson Aguilar to be a thing. So Zay Flowers for me.
Who would have thought the Noah Brown going the IR would be a thing, but that seemed to open up Tank Dell, as you kind of talked about. I know his snaps and his targets increased significantly. In week two, I ran a bunch of optimals here, John. What a gross name that's landing in the most. He's just really, really cheap. And we haven't projected for a little bit more than Dell. Dell's hitting some as well, but it's another cheap receiver that nobody wanted. Everybody thought was dusty. He did score in week two. He's on a team that nobody cares about. Am I helping you out? Are you getting there as far as what receiver nobody wants to play? He's on a brand new team. He's a veteran.
It's not Adam Thielen, right?
It is Adam Thielen.
What's his price? I literally don't even look at Adam Thielen on any.
He's 3.9. He's 3.9.
Not cheap enough. 3.1 or less. 3.1 or less. That's it.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
Although again, Seattle has struggled on defense. Like now, it doesn't even matter. They're still allowing catches to the boundary too. They're just getting train wrecked. So
no, Tariq Woolen got hurt last week. Yeah. We don't know if he's going to play this week. He had chest injury.
I had any faith, that would have been a game we talked about because I don't think either defense can keep up. But also, we need the Panthers to do anything, and it's not pretty with Bryce Young right now.
Yeah, it's not spectacular. Who do you want to add to the conversation as far as some of your favorite receivers we've not yet discussed?
Michael Pittman, Zay Flowers, skinny stacks, I think are fun. I don't know how you fit Justin Jefferson and Tyreek Hill into that, but Pittman did see a 40.9% target share whenever Minshew came off the bench. And again, we just don't know what the Ravens are. They might even be a pass funnel. given that, as Rich talked about earlier, they've historically been a better run defense since they've only played easy matchups against CJ Stroud's debut and Joe Burrow so far. So Michael Pittman is a player I have confidence in. And then if you want to flip the script, you definitely can't fit JJ and Hill in if you do this. But Chris Olave is in a good pivot spot here if you are thinking about like Kendre Miller and just going over the field, because I have long-term questions about the Packers and Saints offense and quarterbacks, honestly. But the Packers are the only defense in the league that have played zone coverage on over 80% of their defensive snaps through two games. And that was Chris Olave's specialty last year. He saw 60% of his targets against zone coverage and averaged 15 yards per catch and the fifth most yards per route run. So we still think it's an amazing spot for Olave, especially because he's getting the ball downfield, and the Packers have allowed the third most air yards per target to opposing receivers downfield. So Olave seems to be in a really good spot.
By the way, I was supposed to do this at the top of the show. My bad. Producer Steve won the four-man for our movie bet. He wasn't quite sure what movie to assign us, and he was gonna. I told him I'd ask the chat to give some suggestions, and I forgot. So my bad. Hopefully, if you guys can throw some out for him, he can kind of figure it out. I'm not sure if he's figured out what he's going to throw at us in a few minutes. He's going to assign us a movie to watch. Again, if you guys are not aware, you probably heard it at some point throughout this podcast, but jump in the Listener League. It's $5. Winner gets not just the acclaim of winning the contest, not just the actual winnings, the American dollars, but you get yourself 1 week free of RG Premium. Myself, John, Rich, and producer Steve are all going to partake as well. But yeah, give us some movies, throw them out there. Ooh, Let It Ride is a spectacular gambler movie. You guys like gambling and Richard Dreyfuss? Let It Ride is for you. From the 80s, it is phenomenal. It still holds up. I watched it not too long ago. Let's go to tight ends. Let's knock out some tight ends, Rich. Your favorite portion. We always end strong here when it comes to our positions. How do you feel about tight ends this slate?
I don't feel anything about tight ends. We talked about maybe it's like saying you just take Kyle Pitts at 3,900 and you just say, Jesus, take the wheel, man. We talked about Taysom. I think you could play Mark Andrews. I think it's a tough slate to do it because I think most gamers want to play one of Tyreek Hill, one of Jefferson, maybe pay for a good quarterback, maybe pay for Tony Pollard with no Christian McCaffrey. It's bad, man. The position's bad. It's the heart of darkness again. All these guys are bad. It's interesting because there's a couple spots. Like you look at it like, I mean, people got so lucky with the Jake Ferguson touchdown last week. He's not really running any routes for the Cowboys. Both Peyton Hendershot and Luke Shoemaker are getting run. They're all these guys suck, man. They're all bad. Like, do you want to play Zach Ertz?
No. What is the official number at? What's the official number of targets and yards for Zach Ertz? I'm sure you have it written down somewhere. It's bad. It's hilarious.
He's at 20 targets.
And how many yards?
He leads the NFL in target share at tight end. He's at 30% of the team targets. What are we doing in the year 2023? You know how many yards he has? 87.
And Durham Smythe is 2,900. But Durham Smythe is going to be the cash game play. So he's going to come in over rostered because I don't know why he's under 3K.
Is that you're banking on Waddle not playing, or you think Smythe is still in play if Waddle plays, if he also plays? Like,
Smythe has led the Dolphins in routes run in both games. He's out there, buddy. He's just out there. I mean,
Laporta
at the early tight end.
As far as tight ends or as far as all Dolphins, he's leading him in routes
run? No, Smythe has led the entire team in routes run in both games.
Wow, okay.
Individually, he is out there. That's what I'm saying. But you can't play him in tournaments because he's going to be the cash game play at 2,900. You have to play him.
If you're pinching pennies, yeah, I suppose, sure. And especially if Waddle is in play, then he's going to be like probably really bad chalk, I'm guessing. Because, you know, Braxton Berrios is going to catch a couple five-yard touchdowns or something.
If you like that. I'm going to play Kyle Pitts and hit myself. Yeah.
Who?
River Craycraft. Would you throw out there?
Craycraft.
In week one, Durham Smythe was wide open for a touchdown, but so was River Craycraft, and Tua threw it to Craycraft. Hell
yeah. I'm trying to think if there's any other sort of sneaky. Like
We would have had some sneaky ones if the Bucs would have been on non Monday night. Cade Otton would have been in play.
Otton's in play?
No, he's on Monday night.
We would have talked about that game, Rich, had we had the Bucs Eagles, because that game's gonna be.
I mean,
hot.
The Eagles have all these injuries at linebacker and safety. Oh, yeah. Like the both weeks they've been giving it up to tight ends.
It's Chris Godwin week, and we can't even talk about it. What a damn shame. Well, that's the thing. We lost to the other cheap tight end because Logan Thomas probably won't play. But whenever he left the game, Cole Turner and John Bates just split routes. Like, Cole Turner is just like a beating heart. He is waiting to break out, but he needs someone to get out of his way because he's that good at football. It's probably not this game, though.
No.
Some of the best ball bros were
Matt Milano will probably bag him.
Yeah.
I'm trying
it's
to
not good, Dean. We're trying. Yeah. It's not good.
It's bad. The position's bad, Dean. Hunter Henry's a tight end too, Dan, like in fantasy football. Like, what do you always say?
I mean, Henry, somebody in chat just wrote Hunter Henry, and he's been pretty good this year so far. And
it's such a bad spot, though, against
but
the Jets.
But even his stuff is kind of fugazi, too, because Mac Jones has the most dropbacks in the NFL, right? Like, and that's how that Patriots have been getting there the past 2 weeks. He's only seen 11% and 16% of the team targets. He's averaging a career low 9.8 yards per catch. It's just Mac Jones is throwing the ball 100 times through two games.
And
are they
going to
do that against Zach Wilson?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Is this Granton character real? Is he possibly something?
He had 10 yards, dude.
Okay. Just asking questions. I think I saw him finally score a touchdown.
He did score a touchdown. His first career touchdown.
He had 10 yards and he was the tight end 14 yards on the week. That explains everything. Explains everything.
I was told this was the greatest rookie class ever of all of tight ends. I know it takes a while to develop tight ends, and it's the hardest position.
Laporta's doing his part.
Yeah, Laporta's look good so far for sure. But all right, that's it, right? We're done. No more tight ends.
I mean, it is what it is. You tight end play who you want. All right, you play who you want.
Play it with your stacks. Just correlate it is all we ever say. Correlate the tight end.
In chat, Guts is saying Ingram. Ingram's going to get a touchdown.
There you go.
He's kind of pricey, though, isn't he? I feel like he's a little expensive.
He's definitely pricey.
Yeah, but sure.
But we are expecting to come back to more two wide sets if they're favored by two scores.
All right, let's bring in producer Steve. That's it for football. If you want to hang around and talk a little movies with us, by all means, we appreciate the join us. We're going to banter back and forth, talk about movies. I won the four-man last week, meaning I assigned these fine folks to watch a movie. I chose Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. It stars one of my favorite movies, movie actors of all time, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Marissa Tomei, who's delightful, Albert Finney, Ethan Hawke. It is not a feel-good movie. It is well-received by the critics, if you care about such things, 89% on Rotten Tomatoes, 71% as far as the audience. But and I guess it's freshest in your mind, right, John? You just watched this before the show, and you were more upbeat than I expected, to be honest, because that is not the most positive movie to watch without giving anything too much away. Well, yeah. What was your general thoughts as far as before? And you went in totally cold, right? You weren't aware of anything.
Was not aware of anything. I wish you would have warned me before I watched it, literally 30 seconds before the show. And by the way, Sosa, pull up the lineup. We need to get back to showing the lineup, your winning lineup. And yeah, I called it behind the scenes. I called it Poor Man's Requiem for a Dream, if only because that's the kind of connotation of the movie. It's like all these bad decisions that eventually culminate in life and lead to like everyone in your life feeling miserable about themselves, but like no other movie encapsulates that better, in my opinion, than Requiem for a Dream, at least that I've seen so far. My only thing is, and it is a good movie, Philip Seymour Hoffman's incredible. It didn't need to start with a sex scene. Like, it came out the gates hot. I was like, okay.
Right out the gates.
I need to buckle in. Like, we came in a doggy style. I was like, give me a second to warm up. Like, I was not ready for this immediately. My only thing though, Deed, is like after like a year and a half of therapy, I feel like I've tried to get away. I don't even watch Black Mirror anymore. I try to just go toward delightful things and feel good things in life. And so like then I came back into art. That's what this is, which was used to be where I kind of gravitated towards. And so I don't know. I don't know if at this time in my life, I don't know if like I love it, but do I appreciate it? Yes, it is a good movie.
My apologies. I didn't know that I was going to be bringing up such things like that. So that was my intent, obviously.
Oh, no. That's fine. That's a gentle subject. That's okay. But like, I don't know. I just want to feel good, Dean. I don't want to go back into that atmosphere. Again, I don't watch Black Mirror, and Black Mirror is like one of the best shows ever, but it just depresses you because it's the closer to life gets. I can't even get on Twitter anymore and like have a conversation because there are no conversations. It's just the first to ever tweet the meme that gets the most clicks. Like, I don't want to be on that place. So I don't know.
It's funny you say Black Mirror because I finally watched my very first episode of Black Mirror. I know a lot of people love it. I watched you probably haven't seen it because it's the most recent batch, the Netflix spoof. I don't know if that's your thing, if that's your bag, Rich, as far as Black Mirror, if that does it for you. But I really can't speak to it. But it was interesting.
I've seen a lot of the earlier ones, but haven't gone back to the newer ones. Like, I haven't seen anything past, like, Anthony Mackie being on it.
Okay, yeah. Which
episode did you watch? Which episode did you watch? No, Dean.
You're asking me. I'm sorry. I just watched talking to Rich. Yeah. I watched the probably one you haven't seen because it's the most recent batch. It was a Netflix spoof. Okay,
got it.
Yeah. It was pretty interesting, and I'm going to watch more. And I like how you can just kind of pick and choose and jump around. They're all sort of like standing their own. So I will revisit it. Can you give me like a recommendation? What's like, is there like a chalk? Like, this is the best Black Mirror
episode ever? Which one did I feel the most pain for? Probably, because that's all they are. They're all just painful.
Yeah.
Probably look up the episode. I can't remember the title where you have rewind installed into your retinas. Like, you're born with rewind in your eyesight. Go to that one.
Okay.
I guess the most depressing is the one where
the John Hamm Christmas episode is really good.
That's a good one. Yeah. The bicycle one where we're all earning credits. That's a really good one. Yep. And then the tender one where you get likes based on how kind you are to people is also a very good one.
There's a Jesse Plemons one too, where like it's like a space show. That one's real good.
I think The Entire History of You might have been the one you're talking about. Does that sound familiar as a title for Black Mirror?
It does sound familiar.
Yes.
Michael in chat says the one with the guy from Mad Men. There you go, John Hamm. So you guys are talking about the same one as well.
The John Hamm one, I think, is a Christmas episode. That one's real good.
All right. I'm sure it's like the Christmas episode from The Bear. Just as happy as you can be. Oh, my God.
Just leave the fork alone. We not with the fork. Incredible show.
Yeah.
But Rich, what do you have as far as your takeaway for Before the Devil Knows Your Dead? We'll bring in producer Steve in a second. We also have my winning lineup, and I didn't know which one I used, to be honest, but we'll pull it up and talk about it in a second.
Well, we got Steve's winning lineup
Yes.
And Steve lapped us. Steve took our suggestions. Wow. He pivoted.
Good at one, and then that Niners game came.
Yeah, it came. Listen, for, if you didn't play Puka, everyone's heart.
It was bad news.
I didn't play Puka, and I finished second. And no, wait, Steve was the only one who played Puka, so that pretty much explains everything right there.
Yeah, he's outraged. I haven't seen what his price is. Obviously, he's on the main slate, so I'm curious where he's going to settle.
It's Monday night.
Yeah, somewhere in the sevens or eights, I guess we'll see. But stay tuned. Producer Steve, feel free to jump in whenever you have a chance to do so and take your victory lap. Do you want to discuss what the brilliance of this lineup, or you want to take your victory lap and taunt us? We're supposed to be the pros here.
And the Millie Steve had Kyren Williams did a James Cook. They stacked five players along with Gabe Davis. So it actually, like, their lineup made a lot of sense.
I didn't have faith in Kyren, but now seeing after the second week, he might be the real deal. But no, I mean, I produce so many shows throughout the week. You know, I'm taking advice from everyone. I'm not really great at this. But I smashed this week, last week, I guess.
And
did
it might be
a real contest?
I did not enter into any real contest.
Mm. Ah.
And honestly, Kyren might be like Rich said about Zach Moss. Like, maybe you're not the real deal, but when you get 20 of 21 backfield touches, who cares? Sometimes that's all it takes.
Yeah,
the lost in like all the Rams stuff. It's like they run the most plays in the NFL. Like,
they have.
Eventually, that might come back down, but like they're running so many plays.
The chat says Joey from Friends is back. They think producer Steve looks like Joey. Okay,
that's a compliment, man. You take.
Yeah,
that.
You could do a lot worse than that.
Yeah, I'll take that. That's fine.
What about everyone else's opinion? We got my opinion on Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. What about everyone else?
Nobody else wants to talk about it, pretty clearly.
Yeah,
I watch it right before the show too. Probably finish like an hour before. At first, I was like, I agreed with Daigle. Like starting off with the sex scene, I was like, "Whoa, okay."
Hard.
After that, I thought it was like going to be a typical like the robbery happened, and I guess what's his name, Hank, was going to feel guilt about it, and it was going to be kind of like predictable what was going to happen at the end, and it really threw me off. It caught me off. I wasn't expecting that ending at all. The last 15 minutes was pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of a slow build, I guess you can say, a slow burn. Is that fair to say, Rich?
Yeah, you reminded me of a very 90s movie. It's like surprised this was made in 2007. Definitely reminded me of a movie that was like made in the 90s, even had the look of like a lot of 90s movies. Really good cast. It's good to see Albert Finney out there. Albert Finney is just like such a great like face with like his mouth open and gape. And it was good to see Rosemary Harris in there. A lot of old throwbacks. Michael Shannon made an appearance for like a little bit.
Yeah. Creepy as ever.
Amy Ryan, like she might have like the most wild catalog. If like you go down like what movies she's been in, she's in so many different things, and you know, even including The Office. But it's crazy the things that she pops into too. But really, just a solid story about, you know, how you got like this, you know, dysfunctional family, and you have one dude, Philip Seymour Hoffman, who's like a true shipbird. You have Ethan Hawke, who's like one of those like shipbirds, but like is an accidental shipbird. Like he kind of has like a big heart, but is just like an idiot. It was kind of fun to kind of see that dynamic, and you know how a family can fall apart in that dynamic. The only thing I didn't like was the shoehorned Hank and Marissa Tomei's character had an affair. For what reason? How did that happen, and why was it there?
Yeah,
there's a motivation that kind of paid off near the end of the movie, is it not, to some degree?
I think
it's paid off without saying something. It's paid off. I think it sort of like sets the stage for.
It's the only that was my only kind of like minor thing, but I enjoyed it. It's a movie I'll probably never want to watch again, but I thought it was solid. If that makes sense.
Completely agree.
It's like Requiem for a Dream. There's some movies like what's the best movie you've seen? It's spectacular, but you have no intention of ever watching it again. Like there's certain movies just kind of fall in that category. I could see that. And you know, it's depressing. It's not an upper. But by the way, the director, speaking of olds, you're talking about, Rich, the director was 82 years old when he directed this.
Wow. What?
Really?
That's yeah.
Crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Sidney Lumet was 82 when he directed this movie. Like, what are you going to do when you're 82?
Not be here, probably.
But that makes sense then, why like the style of it, you know, that track.
Yeah. I was surprised to learn that. And yeah, I thought he was 82, like present day. And like, no, he was born in 1924. So
holy,
that's crazy.
Yeah.
Got a catalog. He directed Serpico and Dog Day Afternoon.
Oh,
12 Angry Men, which is a spectacular movie. That's a movie we should assign, by the way. If you've never seen 12 Angry Men.
He directed The Wiz.
With Michael Jackson?
Yeah, I'm actually going to see The Wiz live. My wife, we have Playhouse tickets, and that's like one of the first ones that she's got.
Is that a thing? Is like every year that is that one just tours around the country? Is it that strong, The Wiz? I wasn't aware.
It goes around. It's one of the first ones. Like she's like a season pass, and that's one of the ones on there. Yeah, Murder on the Orient Express. Like this is like a legend. I didn't know that he directed this.
Yeah, Sidney Lumet. He's not messing around. Steve, you have anything to assign us for next week? And of course, you know, you're not obligated if you're hanging out there in chat, if you're listening to your podcast feeds. But by all means, feel free to join us and listen. We'll discuss after all the football. We save the nonsense with the end of the podcast. There's no complaining. You got like an hour and a half of football, plenty of football. So this is the nonsense portion of the show. But Steve, what did you come up with? Maybe you have a couple options you can throw out there. What do you want to assign us to watch this week?
I really, really don't know. I finished like only an hour before, and I was browsing Hulu during the beginning of the show a little bit to see if there was anything cool on there. The only one I thought was interesting, but you already said you saw, was War Dogs.
Seen War Dogs with what's his name? The Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill, yeah.
It's good.
I feel like Rich and Daigle have seen it too, based on the reaction.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. I mean, you can keep the selections coming, but I don't mind rewatching something, revisiting these movies.
I'm gonna think about it, and I'll pin a comment on this video, and we'll get a tweet out for everyone else to know which movie. But I can't pick one right now. I really don't know. Not good on the spot.
See, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead also messed someone up. It just ruined him. It just wrecked
ruined movies. Ruined movies for him.
What does it say about me is that that's the movie I'm assigning. Is
yeah,
that,
I mean, Dean clearly has a Dean clearly has a genre that he goes into from what he
I like it though.
It was, it was a really good movie though. Like, yeah, and I thought I wasn't going to like it that much at first. And I was like, wow, this was good. Don't know if I really want to rewatch it, but yeah, it was definitely a good movie that I enjoyed.
It stays with you a little bit. I think it stays with you a little bit. You know, maybe too long, possibly. But yeah. All right. Well, you will figure it out. You'll let us know, and we'll be watching a movie at some point. You're going to pin it on the old YouTube. Again, one last time, join the Hunter Man contest, yeah. The Listener League. Get the ticket down. It's $5. $5 on DraftKings. Standard contest. Well, I think actually it's top heavy. You got to finish in the top five, I believe. Producer Devin set that up. So be ambitious. And if you finish first, assuming not one of us finishes first, you get yourself a week free of RG Premium as well. Rich, tell the people, where can they find you? Where can they get all your stuff?
Yeah, sharpfootballanalysis.com. We're writing up the worksheet every week, breaking these games down. Go check that out. You can use promo code week3 for 30% off anything on the site.
John?
Use promo code Daigle on 444.com if you're in the redraft streets. Waiver wire column, I keep updated through Thursday morning. It's pretty much the only like preview waiver wire column as well. Since I'm in those high stakes and home league streets, I know the kind of issues you're having. I'm starting Elijah Mitchell in some leagues tomorrow because I went zero RB. So like I'm sifting through everything along with you. I have skin in the game just like you. So promo code Daigle, 25% off rest of the season.
For John and Rich and producer Steve, for RotoGrinders, I was Dean. We do appreciate y'all listening to the Pick Six Show, week 3. Good luck. Take something down, win some money, watch a movie. Thank you. We're out of here. Out!